Welcome to the deep dive. Today we're really getting into something special. Smoked spare ribs with a bourbon glaze. Our mission isn't just, walking through a basic recipe. We want to uncover all that nuanced knowledge, those little details, and maybe surprising facts that take this dish from just good to, well, unforgettable. Think of it as a journey to getting properly well informed about every single part of making these amazing ribs. We promise some insights that'll seriously upgrade your next barbecue.
Exactly. Yeah, mastering something like this, it's definitely more than just following steps on a page. It's really about understanding why you choose certain ingredients, the techniques that actually work, and even like the science behind how those flavors develop. So in this deep dive, we're covering it all, from picking the right slab of ribs at the butcher, all the way to what drink pairs perfectly with them. The goal is to get you that solid, usable knowledge pretty fast so you're ready to knock it out of the park in your own backyard.
Okay, let's unpack that right away then. You walk into the butcher shop, you see all these different ribs. I mean, where do you even start? It can feel a bit
Oh,
much.
absolutely can.
Yeah.
So, in the U.S., what you mostly need to know about are two main types: St. Louis style, and then your untrimmed spare ribs, St. Louis style. Think of those as like the more refined version. They trim off the sternum bone, the cartilage gives them that nice, neat, rectangular shape.
Ah, okay.
And that's not just looks, it means they cook way more evenly. Plus, they're just easier to handle on the smoker. People love them for that rich, meaty flavor, and honestly, a better meat-to-bone ratio. So, yeah, if you're kind of new to smoking ribs, they're a fantastic starting point. Less fuss.
Right, a bit more predictable, easier to manage. But you mentioned untrimmed ones too. You called them for culinary adventurers. What's the appeal there? What makes them different?
Right? The untrimmed spare ribs. These are for folks who maybe want a bit more of a project, potentially with a bigger flavor payoff. See, they come with more fat, more connective tissue. Now, some people might shy away from that, but here's the thing. If you cook them properly, low and slow for a good long time, all that extra fat and tissue breaks down. It renders out. And it creates this incredibly flavorful, really succulent result. You're basically turning tough stuff into tender, juicy goodness. That longer smoke time isn't just about getting them tender. It lets those fats render deep into the meat, gives you a richer flavor profile, something you might not quite get from the trimmed ones. So at the end of the day, it kind of boils down to what texture you're after, how deep you want that flavor, and how much time you have, honestly. Thickness and fat content, they directly impact cook time and the final taste.
Okay, that makes sense. So, beyond just the regular grocery store, where should we be looking if we want really top-notch ribs? Is there a secret spot?
Huh? No secret handshake, unfortunately. But yeah, if you want to level up your barbecue game, sourcing is key, your best bet. Often it's going to be local butcher shops, maybe reputable meat markets. Look for places that care about where their meat comes from, ideally local. A lot of smaller butchers, they take pride in offering specialty cuts like St. Louis style that maybe the big chains don't stock regularly.
Right.
And don't be afraid to ask them. Ask where they source from, what cuts they recommend for smoking low and slow. They usually know their stuff. Farmers markets are another great option. You get to talk right to the farmer, often find folks raising pigs really well, humanely, sustainably, especially in places like the Midwest, where pig farming is big. The flavor can be amazing.
Good point.
And then, of course, there are the online places, Snake River Farms, Crowd Cow. They've gotten really popular. They deliver high quality, sometimes gourmet or specialty ribs right to your door. Super convenient.
Okay, so we've sourced our perfect ribs. Now, before they even get near the smoker, what are the absolutely crucial prep steps? Feels like the stage could make or break it.
You're totally right. Prep is foundational. Seriously foundational for great ribs.
Yeah.
First up, and this is like non-negotiable, you got to remove that membrane off the back.
Oh, the dreaded membrane.
Yeah, it's this thin, kind of silvery layer. It's tough, and it basically blocks your seasoning and smoke from getting to the meat properly. My trick. Use a butter knife or something dull to just lift a corner of it. Then grab it with a paper towel. Gives you a much better grip. Because trust me, that thing is slippery.
Okay, paper towel, good tip.
Yeah, essential. Once you get a good hold, just pull it off. It should come off in one piece, usually. After that, trim off any like excessive chunks of hard fat. You want some fat? Definitely that's flavor and moisture as it renders. But too much makes for greasy ribs. Aim for a thin, even layer, maybe a quarter inch or so.
Right.
And finally, seasoning. Super important. If you're going with a dry rub, let the rib sit for at least 30 minutes after you put it on, lest the flavors start to meld with the meat if you're marinating. Even better to do it overnight. Really gets that flavor deep in there and helps tenderize too.
Okay, prep done, ribs ready. Now, the big one for a lot of folks, the smoker itself. So many options out there. Offset, pellet, electric. What are the key things to think about when choosing?
That is a huge question, yeah, because the smoker really does shape the whole experience. In the U.S., you're mostly looking at those three: offset, pellet, and electric. Offset smokers, they're kind of the traditional old school choice. Think big BBQ competitions. They use indirect heat from a firebox off to the side, usually burning logs or wood chunks. They definitely take more skill, more hands-on attention to keep that temperature steady. You're adjusting vents, managing the fire.
Sounds like a commitment.
It is. But for folks who love that process, that connection to the fire, and want that deep traditional smoke flavor, the results can be absolutely exceptional.
Okay, so that's the purist's route, maybe. But what about for someone who wants, you know, amazing ribs, but maybe without needing to babysit the fire constantly? Does convenience mean less flavor?
That's exactly where pellet smokers come in. They're incredibly popular for a reason. They burn these little compressed wood pellets for both heat and smoke. And the best part? Digital controls. You set your temperature, say, 225 degrees error, and it pretty much holds it there. For hours.
Ah, set it and forget it, almost.
Pretty much. It makes long cooks, like for ribs, so much easier, super user-friendly, great for beginners or just, you know, busy people. Now, do some purists argue the smoke flavor isn't quite the same depth as a real wood fire in an offset? Sure. But is the flavor still excellent? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And the consistency is unbeatable.
Okay. And electric smokers.
Electric smokers are all about ease and consistency, too. Great if you've got limited space, like on a balcony, or just want minimal fuss. Plug it in, set the temp, add some wood chips for smoke. The smoke profile might be a bit lighter compared to pellet or offset, but they can still turn out really impressive ribs, especially if you're starting out. And hey, don't forget, you can even get decent smoky flavor on a regular gas grill using a smoker box with wood chips. So yeah, convenience doesn't automatically mean bad flavor, just maybe a different kind of smoky flavor.
Interesting. Okay, so the smoker sets the stage, but then there's the wood itself.
Yeah.
How much does the type of wood actually matter? Is it subtle, or can you really mess things up with the wrong wood?
Oh, it matters.
Yeah.
It really matters. It's not just a subtle thing. Think of wood as a key ingredient. Different woods have different chemical makeups, right?
Yeah.
When they burn, they release different aromatic compounds.
Yeah.
Hickory has that strong, almost bacon-like punch. Apple or cherry woods, much milder, sweeter. These compounds literally interact with the meat, creating new flavors on the surface. That smoke ring you see, that's visible evidence of those chemical reactions happening. For pork ribs, hickory is a classic choice. It's bold, stands up to the richness of the pork. But if you want something gentler, maybe let the rib flavor itself shine more. Fruit woods like apple, cherry, even pecan are fantastic. Milder, often a bit sweeter smoke.
Can you mix them?
Totally. Mixing woods is a great way to build complexity. Like maybe hickory for a strong base, but add some cherry for sweetness and color. But here's the critical part where people can mess up. Use properly seasoned dry wood. Always.
Why dry?
Because wet wood or green wood doesn't burn cleanly. It smolders, produces thick, white smoke. And that dirty smoke, it tastes awful. Bitter, acrid, it can absolutely ruin your food. You want thin, almost blue smoke, clean combustion. Proper wood storage is key too.
Thin blue smoke.
Got it.
Okay, now, the moment of truth, temperature and time. How do we hit that sweet spot for fall off the bone tender ribs without drying them out? That seems like the ultimate goal.
It really is.
Yeah.
And mastering temp and time, it's everything for tender, juicy ribs. The magic number generally is low and slow. We're talking a target smoker temperature between 225 degrees Fahrenheit and 250 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah.
That range.
Okay.
That steady, gentle heat is what allows the tough connective tissues, the collagen, in the ribs to slowly break down and transform into gelatin. That's what makes them succulent and tender. Rush it with high heat, you get tough ribs. Monitoring that temperature is vital, especially with offset smokers where temps can fluctuate. A good digital thermometer, maybe even one with probes, you can leave in the smoker and the meat. It's not a luxury, it's essential.
Right. And how long are we talking?
Typically, for spare ribs, you're looking at around 5 to 6 hours total cook time in that temp range. But it varies, right? Based on thickness, the smoker. Which leads us to the 3-2-1 method. Ever heard of that?
I have. But break it down. What's the thinking behind it?
Okay, so 3-2-1 is a really popular technique specifically for spare ribs because it manages moisture and tenderness really well. It's basically three phases. Phase one, 3 hours. You smoke the ribs unwrapped right on the grates at your target temp, say 225 degrees Fahrenheit. The goal here is to get that smoke flavor infused into the meat. And seriously, try really hard not to open the lid much during this time. Keep that temp stable.
Okay, 3 hour smoke.
Phase two.
Yeah.
2 hours. You take the ribs off, wrap them tightly in aluminum foil. You can add a little liquid in there too, like apple juice or cider vinegar, but it's optional.
Yeah.
Then back on the smoker they go.
Why the foil? Just moisture.
Moisture, yes, but it's more than that. Wrapping creates steam inside the foil. It's like a mini braising environment. This really accelerates the breakdown of that collagen. It powers through the stall, that period where the temp seems to stop rising, and gets the ribs incredibly tender, faster than leaving them unwrapped. It's a crucial step for that fall off the bone texture.
Oh, okay. Steaming them tender. Makes sense.
Phase 3, 1 hour. Unwrap the ribs carefully. Watch out for steam.
Mm.
Put them back on the smoker grates. And now you start brushing them with your glaze. That last hour unwrapped lets the bark firm up a bit. The glaze caramelizes beautifully. And you lock in that final layer of smoky flavor.
3, 2, 1. Smoke, wrap, glaze. Got it.
That's the framework. You might need to adjust times based on your ribs and smoker, but it's a solid starting point.
And during that whole long cook, especially the unwrapped parts, you mentioned clean smoke before. How do you keep an eye on that? What if it starts looking wrong?
Good question. Yeah, you definitely want to monitor the smoke itself, not just the temperature. Like we said, you're aiming for that thin blue smoke. If you start seeing thick, white, billowy smoke, that's usually bad news.
What causes that?
Often it means the fire isn't getting enough oxygen, or maybe the wood is damp, or you just added too much wood at once and it's smoldering instead of burning cleanly.
Mm.
That thick white stuff, it carries compounds that taste bitter, almost like creosote. It'll make your ribs taste harsh, acrid.
So what do you do if you see it?
You need to adjust. Check your vents. Maybe open them up a bit to give the fire more air. Make sure your wood isn't soaking wet. Maybe add smaller pieces of dry wood more gradually. You want to get back to that clean burn. And while you're managing smoke and temp, keep that internal meat temperature in mind, around 160 degrees Peyron internal. That's often when ribs hit the stall and start to soften up nicely. Good time to wrap if you're doing the 3-2-1. Then you keep cooking until they hit that magic zone, somewhere between 190 degrees Peyron and 203 degrees Peyron internal. That's when all that connective tissue has really melted, giving you that super tender pull-apart quality.
Perfect. Okay, let's switch gears a bit to the actual flavor architects, the rubs and glazes. Starting with the dry rub, what goes into a really great rub? Is there a secret formula?
Well, everyone has their own secret formula, right? But the building blocks are usually pretty consistent. You almost always start with salt and sugar. Salt enhances flavor, helps with moisture retention. Sugar, often brown sugar, is key, not just for sweetness, but it helps create that beautiful dark crust to the bark through caramelization and the Maillard reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Then you build on that. Paprika is huge in BBQ rubs, adds color and mild sweetness. Black pepper for a little bite, garlic powder and onion powder for that savory backbone. Those are kind of the core essentials. The real art is in the balance. How much sweet versus savory? Do you want heat? If so, you add cayenne pepper, maybe some chili powder. Want more smokiness? Smoked paprika is great.
So lots of room to play around.
Totally. Experimentation is key.
Yeah.
Adjust it to your taste. That's the fun part for applying it. Pat the ribs dry first. That helps the rub stick better. Then be generous. Sprinkle it on evenly, all sides, top and bottom. Don't be shy. Then kind of gently massage or pat it in. And remember that resting time we mentioned. At least 30 minutes after rubbing lets the salt start to work its magic, ideally. Rub them down, wrap them tight in plastic wrap, and let them hang out in the fridge overnight. Even better flavor penetration.
You mentioned the philosophy of labor earlier. How do these rubs change across different BBQ regions in the U.S.? Does a Memphis rub taste totally different from a Texas one?
Oh, absolutely. It's fascinating how regional styles developed, often based on local traditions, what ingredients were available, immigrant influences. Take Memphis style.
Yeah.
Often heavy on the paprika and other spices, usually sweet, designed to be eaten dry, meaning without a lot of sauce, maybe just a little on the side. The rub is the star.
Okay.
The Kansas City. Very different vibe. Their rubs are often sweet too. Lots of brown sugar and paprika, maybe a little cayenne kick, but they're explicitly designed to complement their classic thick, sweet, tomato and molasses-based BBQ sauce. It's a total package. And actually, that KC-style sweetness works really well with a bourbon glaze later.
Interesting connection.
Right. And then you jump over to Texas, especially Central Texas brisket country, and the rubs get way simpler. Often it's literally just coarse salt and black pepper, maybe a little garlic powder. The whole philosophy there is about letting the quality of the meat and the flavor of the post-oak smoke be the main event. Minimalist, but powerful.
Wow. So the rub really tells a story about the place.
Exactly. It's culinary history you can taste.
All right, let's talk about our star player today, that bourbon glaze. How do we build this culinary masterpiece? Are we talking specific bourbons, special techniques?
Yeah, the bourbon glaze, it adds that final layer of sweet, tangy, boozy complexity. And that beautiful sheen, the core components. usually bourbon, brown sugar, and often something savory salty like soy sauce or Worcestershire sauce. A good starting point, ratio-wise, might be like 1 cup of bourbon to 1 cup of brown sugar. That gives you the base.
Does the type of bourbon matter much?
It does, but you don't need top shelf stuff. A decent standard bourbon works great, something with good oak and caramel notes. You can experiment with rye for a spicier kick or a wheated bourbon for something softer. But a solid mid-range bourbon is perfect. You're cooking off most of the alcohol anyway, so it's more about the underlying flavor notes. Then you layer in other flavors. Dijon mustard adds tang. Apple cider vinegar cuts the sweetness. A dash of hot sauce brings a little heat. Garlic, onion powder, maybe some smoked paprika again to echo the rub. It's all about balancing those elements. Sweet, tangy, savory, maybe a little heat. You want it complex but harmonious.
Okay, so we mix those ingredients. Then how do you cook it? Is there a trick to getting the right consistency?
Yeah, cooking it down is key. You combine everything in a saucepan, bring it to a simmer over medium heat, stirring until that sugar is totally dissolved. Then you let it simmer gently, reduce the heat a bit. You want it to thicken up. Usually takes about 10, maybe 15 minutes. The pitfall here is letting it scorch. Keep the heat gentle. Stir it occasionally, especially scraping the bottom. You're looking for a syrupy consistency. It should coat the back of a spoon, you know, like warm maple syrup. Not watery, but not thick like molasses either.
I got it. Syrupy.
Exactly. And then let it cool down just a bit before you brush it on the ribs during that last hour of cooking. If it's too hot, it might just run right off. Cooling slightly helps it cling better and caramelize nicely.
Can you make variations, like add different spices or sweeteners?
Oh, absolutely. This is where you can really get creative. Think about adding warm spices, a pinch of cinnamon, maybe some allspice, could be really interesting with the bourbon, different sweeteners.
Sure.
Maple syrup instead of some brown sugar. Honey, a touch of molasses for depth. Go for it. You could add some citrus zest, orange or lemon right at the end for brightness. Or maybe some fresh herbs like thyme or rosemary, finely chopped.
Ooh, herbs sound interesting.
Yeah, just be mindful of balance. Taste as you go. That's the most important part of experimenting. And bonus, leftover glaze. Keeps great in an airtight container in the fridge for a week or two. Just reheat it gently. It's fantastic on grilled chicken, pork chops, even brushed on some grilled pineapple. Super versatile.
Nice. Okay, so we've put in all this work. The ribs smell amazing. They look incredible. How do we know for sure that they are perfectly done and ready to come off that smoker? What are the signs?
Right. Nailing the doneness is crucial. You don't want to overcook or undercook them after all that effort.
Yeah.
Internal temperature is your most reliable guide. We're aiming for that 190 degrees Fahrenheit to 203 degrees Fahrenheit for a range in the thickest part of the meat, avoiding the bone. Use your instant read thermometer.
190 to 203.
Okay. In that zone, the connective tissues have really broken down nicely. The meat will be super tender. But temp isn't the only sign. Look visually, too. You want that deep, rich, mahogany color. You should see the meat has pulled back slightly from the ends of the bones, maybe a quarter inch, half inch. That's a good indicator.
The pullback, right. I've heard of that.
Yep. And then there's the bend test. Carefully pick up the rack of ribs from the center using tongs. If they're ready, the rack should bend easily. Almost like it might break, and you might see some cracks forming in the crust on the surface. If it feels stiff, needs more time.
Bend test, good practical check.
Exactly. Between temp, color, pullback, and the bend test, you'll know when they're ready.
All right, they're perfect. Off the smoker they come. Can we just dive right in? Or is there one last crucial step? I feel like patience might be involved again.
Patience is definitely still involved. You are spot on. This is critical. You must let the ribs rest before you slice them.
Ah, resting. Why is that so important for ribs?
Same reason it's important for steak or a roast. When the meat is cooking, the muscle fibers tighten up and push the juices towards the center. If you slice immediately, all that delicious moisture just pools out onto your cutting board. Resting tented loosely with foil for maybe 15, even up to 30 minutes, allows those muscle fibers to relax and, crucially, lets the juices redistribute evenly throughout the meat. It means every bite will be moist and flavorful. Skip the rest. You risk dry ribs no matter how perfectly you cook them.
Okay. Patience pays off. 15 to 30 minutes rest.
Got it. Yep. Then, presentation time. Use a good sharp knife. Slice cleanly between the bones. Arrange them nicely on a platter. Maybe drizzle a little extra warm glaze over the top. Garnish with some chopped fresh parsley or maybe some thinly sliced green onions for color and freshness. Makes it look as good as it tastes.
Sounds amazing. So the masterpiece is sliced, rested, ready to go. What do we serve alongside these incredible ribs to make it a truly epic meal? Any surprising side dish ideas?
Oh, the supporting cast. Very important. Classic BBQ sides are classic for a reason they just work. Coleslaw is almost essential, right? That cool, creamy, crunchy contrast to the rich, smoky meat. Perfect. Baked beans, sweet, savory, maybe with some bacon or sausage mixed in. Another staple that complements the ribs beautifully.
Can't go wrong there.
And cornbread. Slightly sweet, maybe a little crumbly. Perfect for sopping up any extra glaze or sauce. Yes, yeah. Please. But if you want to mix it up, maybe go a little lighter or more modern. Grilled vegetables are great. Zucchini, bell peppers, asparagus. Just toss with olive oil, salt, pepper. Add some freshness and color.
That's a great deal.
Or think about a bright salad. Maybe a quinoa salad with lots of fresh herbs, some cherry tomatoes and lemon vinaigrette. Cuts through the richness really nicely. Uh-huh. Or even something like a Brussels sprout slaw with a tangy dressing instead of a creamy one. Unexpected, but delicious.
Brussels sprout slaw. Interesting. And drinks. What washes it all down?
For drinks, keep it refreshing. Classic iced tea, sweet or unsweetened, maybe infused with mint or lemon. Always a winner. Beer lovers, a hoppy IPA can cut through the richness of the pork and glaze really well. Or go the other way. A malty porter or a stout can really complement the smoky sweetness. Both work.
Okay.
Non-alcoholic. You can't beat homemade lemonade. Or maybe some fruit-infused sparkling water. Something to cleanse the palate between those rich, smoky bites.
Yeah.
Even a dry, hard cider could be a nice, tart counterpoint. Lots of options.
Wow. What an amazing journey we've been on. Seriously, from figuring out St. Louis versus untrimmed ribs to sourcing the membrane, the smoke, that 3-2-1 method, crafting the rub and that incredible bourbon glaze, all the way to resting and pairing. I feel like anyone listening has gained just a ton of valuable, practical, and yeah, even some surprising knowledge to really take their smoked ribs to the next level. Truly unforgettable.
Absolutely. And you know, beyond just the steps and the science, maybe a final thought to chew on. What does mastering a dish like this, something that takes time and care, really teach you? Maybe something about patience, about adapting when things don't go exactly to plan, about the simple joy of creating something really unique and delicious through attention to detail, and maybe, too, a willingness to play with flavors, to explore those regional traditions we talked about, or even invent your own. So I'd encourage everyone listening, keep exploring. Try a different regional style next time. Tweak that rub, experiment with the glaze. The barbecue adventure, it never really ends.